Shipping and logistics are two industries that have been booming ever since the pandemic as the supply chain broke down. And none have been more affected than the semiconductor chip industry. These small chips aren't everything these days, from planes and national defense systems to your smartphone, your car, all the way down to your coffee maker. But it looks like relief is just around the corner as analysts believe the chip cycle downturn is nearing. I'm Christy Ai, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're breaking down how global supply chain disruptions and changes in the chip industry are costing you in a big way. Most people don't talk about semiconductors in their everyday life, but these little chips power everything around you, your phone, your computer, your car. Without them, technology comes to a halt, which is why the semiconductor value chain is one of the most complex and geographically dispersed processes. What is the cost of supplying semiconductors to the market? Well, the typical cycle takes more than 100 days, with the chip crossing international borders 70 or more times, and ultimately making the equivalent of 3 full trips around the world to fabricate. As many will recall, headlines of chip shortages filled the news in 2020 due to supply chain disruptions caused by US-China trade war, and subsequently, COVID. Billions were invested into expanding the chip industry and building out foundries. Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing and Samsung Electronics announced 3-year global capital expenditure plans in 2021 of approximately $100 billion each. But building a chip foundry is a far cry from an apartment complex you watch rise over a summer. These factories that build these chips, they cost between $10 to $20 billion and can take 3 to 5 years to build. This is due to the hundreds of steps and the necessity for airtight clean rooms and strict temperature controls as robots transport the wafers from machine to machine. So optimistically, these new foundry investments would likely begin producing chips in late 2023 or early 2024. But will there still be demand for all these chips then? Will we still be experiencing a chip shortage by 2024? Well, that's hard to say. As the world becomes increasingly reliant on technology, these chips, which are basically the brains behind all the modern electronics, will become increasingly more valuable. But with production rising so dramatically from all these investments around the world into new foundries, does the industry risk oversupply? And to break this down further, let's bring in Aquiles Larrea, founder and CEO of Larrea Wealth Management. Now, how is the chip industry now? And are we still seeing constraints in the chip industry today?
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing the constraints due to supply chain issues. We're also seeing inflation affecting it. The capital expenditures that these companies are making are all part and parcel. These are 5 to 10 year plans for these companies. So that's absolutely nothing new to them. Samsung and Taiwan Semiconductor, the leaders in the field, tend to be putting more money right now, as you said, between 10 to 20 billion. And that's going to see, we're going to see if that's going to pay off within the next 5 to 10 years. It's not an overnight thing, as we talked about before. But the state of the industry, influx, inflation affecting the prices, and at the same time, how much are those prices going to be going up? And can they get the products to market? You know, chips are in anything to toothbrushes, to washing machines, to cars and laptops and the like. They're so infused in our life. Yes, it's going to be affected by what's going on with inflation. And yes, we're going to see some slowdowns, but we only think here that it's going to go out to 2023.
Now, we have recent checks with the industry contracts reflecting an accelerating and broadening trend of order cancellations that actually started in April of this year. So it seems like device makers are increasingly reluctant to take inventory of chips since they can't complete products amid supply chain constraints for other components. So will all this heavy CapEx investments into foundries pay off, or is the industry in for a slump?
Well, the capital expenditures, these companies knew that they were going to have to do it. When they're doing these type of investments, they're trying to do forward thinking going forward anywhere between 3 and 10 years corporations are looking at. I personally believe that there is plenty of room and plenty of product, even though some companies may hold off. What I see end up happening is that they're going to actually pay more for it later, because Taiwan Semiconductor, Intel, Samsung, they're all saying they're going to raise the prices. So these companies, either you spend now, or if you're holding off, you're going to spend later, and it's going to cost you quite a bit more.
The semi industry seems to be moving from global collaboration to a more self-sufficient strategy, with three emerging centers of influence, if you will. You have the West, you have China and Japan and Korea. So is that a net positive or a net negative for the industry now that it's become so segregated?
Well, I can't see this as a net positive at this particular point. Would I like to see more countries and more regions get involved in it? Yes, but that's not going to happen at this particular point. We have dominant players who are going to continue to dominate, like your Taiwan, China, and the West. The funny thing is, if you're looking at the United States really doesn't have anywhere where we're manufacturing chips. A lot of these countries have subsidies as high as 70% to build those factories there. So that's why you're starting to see a lot more countries in the East be the dominators, like your China and Taiwan's of the world, along with Korea as well. And I don't see that changing at this particular point. So I can't say it's neutral. I actually think it's a little more negative at this point.
And high inflation is also driving the semiconductor industry in reverse. So how exactly does inflation affect the chips industry?
Yeah, well, inflation affects everything. If you think about it, just look at what we've seen recently with gasoline prices going up more than 60% in some countries. And although we're seeing that inflation has gone up 9% this particular month, the highest it's ever been in a particular short period of time, we're actually starting to see, we're thinking that that's actually the peak, that we're going to start to see the move downward as we head into August. Inflation, one of the big indicators of inflation is gasoline prices. And those prices for the last 20 days have gone down every single day. So from the high point that we saw just 20 days ago, it's gone down. We see the same thing happening with the chip and the semiconductors. Yes, people are going to have to pay more for those products. In some cases, it's gone as high as 40%. But at the same time, as inflation starts to abate and things start to go down, we're going to see the similar effect in the semiconductor area, and things will start to reverting back to normal. By first quarter 2023, we're also thinking that the computers are going to be less affected than other areas where chips are a big part of their industry.
Aquiles Larrea, founder and CEO of Larrea Wealth Management, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, the real cost of semiconductor chips is found in the complexity and their design and manufacturing process, as they're so often made using raw materials like silicon and germanium, along with other pure elements. The production involves adding impurities to the base elements in a process called doping. Computer memory, integrated circuits, and transistors are all built using semiconductors. During production, semiconductors are fabricated on single crystal materials. And during this process, molten polycrystalline semiconductor material is combined with a dopant, and then a seed crystal is introduced. The crystal is then pulled, polished, and diced into wafers that are polished into a point of being almost completely flat at an atomic level. Next is a process known as photolithography, which uses light to transfer geometric patterns from a photo mask to a photosensitive chemical. By doing this, the process coats the surface of the wafer with a mask that blocks everything not meant to be exposed to UV light. Once completed, The exposed portion is dissolved, which leaves part of the surface protected, and other portions exposed for etching, which traces the shape of wiring and other components. The entire process establishes a single layer of a circuit. And depending on the complexity of the manufacturing process, there can be up to 1,400 process steps in the overall manufacturing of the semiconductor wafer alone. Once fabrication is complete, the semiconductors on the silicon wafer must go through assembly, testing, and packaging, also known as ATP stages of production, which can take an additional 6 weeks to complete, past the 14 to 20 weeks it takes to manufacture the wafer in the first place. In short, the cost of semiconductor chips is found in its complexity, its time-consuming process, and in the very controlled environment in which it is created. When we come back, port congestion is generating again a higher cost for manufacturing and eventually to you. We'll have more after the break.
Нас називали дивізії Waffen-СС.
Я узниця концлагеря Салспіля, страшного Салспіля.
Заживо гнили діти.
Це не доказано, то є научно.
Там на полметра была пропитана земля полусгоревшим человеческим жиром. 632 тела ребенком.
Здесь мой взвод. Очень интеллигентные люди. Очень приятно было работать.
Больно это все вспоминать.
А у нас ни воды, ни хлеба, вообще ничего.
Здесь продуктовые наборы, здесь есть все.
Обстреливают еще нацики, понимаешь?
Азовцы, если находили московские телефоны или что, убивали в хлам.
Нацики отходили, просто заливали бензином с канистр, подпаливали и уходили.
Люди очень боятся, чтобы сюда назад не вернулась Украина.
Детей можете отдельно собрать, сейчас закончим сладкое розанка.
Главный принцип – все, что собирают люди в России, донести непосредственно в руки нуждающимся здесь, на территории Донбасса.
Despite the slowdown, port congestion is growing again as a result of labor and equipment inefficiencies, especially as we enter into peak season for logistic managers. Shanghai, the largest seaport in the world, is still in the process of reopening. Manufacturing plants in Shanghai have been shut down for 75 days due to zero COVID restrictions, and even operating at 24/7 capacity, they still will not be caught up until at least the end of July. Meanwhile, in Europe, port congestion is worsening as the availability of empty containers to be filled with trade. The situation is compounded with a persistent shortage of truck drivers, as well as a labor strife between trade unions and the seaport. Despite the historic volumes of containers, a pullback is expected as future orders of Chinese manufacturing have dropped 20 to 30%. With more on the state of the ports, let's bring in Dr. Jack Rasmus, professor of economics and politics at St. Mary's College. So, Jack, what is the root cause of all of the backlog in these ports? Is it simply COVID?
Well, it's partly COVID, but it's more than just COVID, of course. You know, during COVID, what happened with the ports is that, a lot of the workers got laid off, and the same with the shipping. Then when they tried to reopen, they had a supply chain problem, not just in the ports, but in the shipping lanes and so forth, and unloading the ports, et cetera. So, you know, it was COVID, and to some extent, it still is COVID in China because of the shutdowns going on there. But it's not just totally COVID. We've got other problems now with inflation and energy shortages, delivery of energy shortages because of what's going on in Europe and Ukraine and other places and the sanctions and so forth. So the supply chain problems still exist. But the supply chain means not just what's going from port to port over the oceans. It's also, do you have sufficient skilled workers at the ports to be able to unload, the goods? And, do you have available truckers to carry the goods from the ports to the, inner warehouses, mega warehouses, and from those warehouses to the local warehouses? Well, we've had a shortage of labor here in the U.S., particularly in road delivery, trucks, 18-wheelers. That's partly because it's so darn expensive now for these truck drivers to wait at these ports and idle their trucks in order to pick things up. So a lot of them haven't come back to work, in other words. And then you have problems in the warehouses, the same thing. So the labor markets have been seriously disrupted, not just the goods markets, as we would say in economics. And that's part of the problem as well. Railroad employment, skilled employment, and so forth. So it's all that's COVID related. But, when you get these shortages engineered because of the sanctions, that adds to the problems another layer. What that means is that there's not as much demand for imports, or companies can't afford and put off their purchases of semi-finished goods for imports, and consumers, because of the inflation, can't afford to buy as many goods, so you don't have as much delivered into the ports. That's exacerbated most in the case of Europe, for example. So there's different problems in different parts of the country, whether you're in China, whether you're in the U.S., whether you're in Europe. But in all cases, it means we have a multiple set of problems in the supply chains that still exist.
Now, Google, one of the biggest tech powerhouses, is moving aggressively to support logistics and supply chain operations with its Google Cloud platform. What do you think of this move, and how can Google help fix these logistics issues?
Well, Google can help making the movement of goods, the predicting of the movement of goods, more efficient. But that really doesn't resolve the problem of, for example, in the U.S., you've got this tremendous, increase in gasoline and fuel prices. That's not going to solve the problem that truckers can't afford to wait at the ports for 4 hours with their engines idling and pay that extra cost of gas. So there's nothing Google can do about that. That's an inflation problem. That's an energy cost, energy price problem. And that has bigger causes than just the ports.
How do these port congestions and delays affect the consumer?
Well, they affect the consumer in significant ways. First of all, if you have fewer goods coming into the country, then the price of those goods are going to go up. That means inflation is going to go up. Import inflation goes up, drives the whole consumer price index up. And that's contributing to what's going on as well in the U.S. If businesses can't get their goods, their semi-finished goods and their raw materials and so forth, and they're not going to invest and expand. They're going to wait and see and not take an aggressive, increasing their output and hiring more people and so forth. Or they're going to start laying people off, which is their, just beginning to occur here. So it has a big impact on employment, on business, on GDP. It has an impact on consumers and spending. It's part of the general problem we have with, accelerating inflation. The problem is, with the ports and supply chains, it's really two sides of the same coin here. The problem with the ports is the problem with supply chains. That supply chain problem has been exacerbated by what's going on in global commodities markets as a result largely of the sanctions and what's happening in Europe and elsewhere.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jack Rasmus, for your insight. When it comes to the cost of semiconductors, with all of these supply chain disruptions around the world, there are very few winners besides the transport companies that are able to upcharge for their services. Companies now have to rejigger their operations, and it's forcing them to question long-held beliefs about just-in-time, or traditionally, JIT production. JIT works well when there are no disruptions and all the goods arrive just in time as scheduled. But now, many companies are forced to pivot to just-in-case, or JIC production, where it's forced to move or use cash on hand to purchase excess inventory. This leads to other costs associated with JIC, such as more defective products, wasted space, extra equipment, overtime, and simply more storage costs. So how long are we supposed to live with these supply chain disruptions, and will it ever be resolved or fixed? Unfortunately, a lot of the problems that we have with the supply chain are deeply rooted points of congestion that will take a significant amount of capital expenditure and investment in order to modernize. Issues like labor shortages at the docks and lack of truck drivers are going to continue to plague the local economies. I think global port congestion is set to continue until at least early 2023, with the spot freight rates continuing to be elevated. That's our show for today. I'm Christy I, and I'll see you next time for The Cost of Everything.